Welcome to Under New Management, a podcast of the Organizational Behavior Division of the Academy of Management. I'm Mike Johnson, an assistant professor of management and organization at the University of Washington Business School in Seattle. In this podcast, we feature interviews with the authors of new and notable research in the field of organizational behavior. Often, these studies have counterintuitive findings that challenge the conventional wisdom about how to manage people. As we discuss the implications of their studies for organizations, we'll highlight how their research can enhance your effectiveness as a manager. Okay, with us on the phone is Deborah Shapiro. Deborah is the Clary Smith Professor of Management and Organization in the Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland in Washington, D.C. area. Deborah's also an associate editor of the Academy of Management Journal, one of the premier journals publishing management research. Deborah, thanks for agreeing to be on the podcast.
Oh, I'm very happy to have this opportunity.
Great. Now, the reason I asked you to be on the podcast is actually a paper that you published recently in the Academy of Management Journal gave rise to the idea for the podcast. That was a from the editor's paper called Perceived Causes and Solutions of the Translation Problem in Management Research. So what is the translation problem?
Well, actually, the translation problem is really not singular, but rather it's of two kinds. One is that a lot of what we're doing is just not even in the awareness of people outside of the Academy of Management, and that's a problem because there's a lot of very good, strong, and helpful research happening that we think could inform some very important issues, for example, potentially even public policy if people were aware of what we were doing. So that's one of the problems, and the other is the question of relevance, which is, are we studying the right things?
Absolutely. And so in the paper, you talk about these two different translation problems using the terms lost in translation and lost before translation. Can you explain what those terms mean?
Well, by lost in translation, we were referring to the difficulty of translating management research into publications, frameworks, and tools that managers can use in their work. And in fact, that is the form of translation that tends to get the most press. Some people would call that knowledge transfer. One of the problems with that, at least alone, is it assumes that knowledge is held only by academics and that it's their challenge to impart it to basically non-academics. And that one-way street is one of the things we were trying to highlight as a wrong way of thinking of things. The other form of translation problem, what we call lost before translation, refers to the difficulty of getting management scholars and practitioners to collaborate together in formulating what needs to be researched in the first place. What are the problems that, in fact, are in need of resolving? What are the issues that managers might, in fact, be wrestling with that, if they understood better, could potentially help them, as well as not just them, but, again, broader society potentially, if the problems were identified jointly by both the management scholars as well as management practitioners.
Okay, so this first problem, the lost in translation problem, good research is being done, but it's not being communicated in a way that makes sense to managers so they can put it into practice. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
I would say so, and not only in ways that make sense, but even that are just easily accessible.
And then the second problem, the lost before translation problem, is that perhaps we're doing some research that has no relevance to managers, and so we're not even approaching questions that they really care about or that can really make a difference in organizations. Is that correct?
Exactly.
In your study, you went about trying to figure out how much of a problem this is, right? Can you tell us a little bit about your methods?
Sure. Well, what we did is we conducted an online survey of the Academy Management members between December 2006 and February 2007. It resulted in about 548 people.
Okay.
And then in the survey, we basically asked them three things. We asked them to what extent they perceived the translation problem to be of the two kinds that I mentioned before. We also, for each of these problems, asked them the extent to which they perceived various possible sources of each problem to indeed be responsible. And finally, we also asked them the extent to which they perceived various possible solutions to each of these translation problems to be viable. And then we analyzed their answers to these issues in terms of, you know, were they academics, were they non-academics, and we looked at other demographic influences such as the seniority that they had in each of their professions and their disciplinary backgrounds to see if any of those demographic differences would help explain the perceptual differences that we saw.
And what were your findings?
Actually, what we found was there was definitely a gap, which has been noted before, and we cite in our article where it has been noted, so we kind of support previous findings that would suggest academics and practitioners do view this differently. In general, the practitioners were more concerned about the translation problems than the academics, although the gap was larger when you looked at the more senior folks. The younger academics tended to be more concerned about it than the more senior folks, and we thought that was kind of interesting. And in terms of causes, there was, despite the difference I just noted, though, interesting similarities across the groups. Three factors emerged. One was the university's promotion and tenure system and doctoral student training, which tends to encourage people to publish in only the top-tier academic journals. Another cause that, again, tended to emerge regardless of the demographic differences I noted before, was related to practitioners' resource constraints. I'm sorry, academics and practitioners' resource constraints, such as teaching-related constraints and the lack of time and funding for academic-practitioner collaboration. Factor three, which emerged for causes, tended to be more practitioner and consultant-oriented, and it tended to focus on incentive-related constraints. For example, for obtaining and understanding academic research. And in terms of the solutions to the problems, interestingly, again, there were three that tended to emerge across demographic lines. One, not really surprisingly, because I think it kind of fits with intuition, is that one solution would be simply to lean very heavily on the Academy of Management to design workshops and activities to bring academics and practitioners together. What I thought was particularly interesting was that, of course, is not by itself sufficient, and indeed the data support the idea that people saw that there were needs for other solutions. Namely, another factor that emerged in solutions was getting practitioners involved in reviewing for the Academy Management Conference and for its journals. Interestingly, that has a tendency to be dominated, I think, by academics, presumably because when evaluating the quality of academic research, it's generally considered a wise thing to get peer academics to do so. And, of course, that is important, but at least this finding would suggest that if we're going to try to get practitioners and academics more collaborating together, maybe it's time to share some of that, at least in some capacity. And the third solution that emerged was providing hands-on help in and outlets for academics who wish to write for practitioners. And that kind of goes back to one of the causes. We tend, all of us, early in our career, to be trained only to write for a specific kind of audience, namely the top-tier academic journal audience. And so one of the solutions that emerged was that maybe basically that training, if it's not to occur at the doctoral level, even later in our careers, might be something all of us can benefit from, so that who we are writing for is basically a broader audience.
And what sort of journals or outlets would academics then publish their research in to make it more accessible to practitioners, to people who are actually managers in organizations?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I think the short answer would be whatever our top practitioner-oriented journals tend to be. You know, of course, Harvard Business Review, California Management Review, there's a lot of good, more practitioner, well, I won't say a lot, but there are a handful of some very good practitioner-oriented outlets out there. The problem is they're not enough in number to allow everyone to readily use those outlets as the means of getting their research known. So another thing that came out in our findings was the idea that, first of all, print outlets should not necessarily be the only way we are communicating our findings. We ought to be using more digital means to do so and just basically think a lot more creatively than we have, I think, up to this point about all the communication channels, not just print, that we could use for folks to become more aware of what it is that we're doing.
Such as a podcast.
Such as a podcast. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Well, because these two translation problems seem to be so prevalent, the Academy seems to be doing things to try to get the Academy members to address these, but you know, non-academics make up a very small percentage of the Academy membership. What couldn't managers do to help to address the two translation problems?
I think that's a great question. I would say the short answer, and I'm happy to elaborate, is that boundary-spanning activities on the part of managers and or even the corporations as a whole are things that perhaps the organization should really think creatively about. How, via what activities, could they get the practicing managers more accessible to academics, particularly when they are in the process of formulating research questions or projects in general where they're going to be collecting data so they get together at the front end, not just after the research has already occurred. And specific examples for how, for example, this boundary spanning could occur that we mentioned in our article, one is companies could potentially sponsor sabbaticals for academics in business practice. And during those sabbaticals, perhaps the academics could serve as translators of research results or as researchers on a set of issues that are particularly of interest to the organization at that time. As another example, practitioners. And this I am actually seeing happen in more and more business schools. They could have some sabbaticals as executives in residence at business schools or as fellows at research institutes in which they actually help shape and participate in research programs.
Okay, great. So encouraging managers to reach out to people doing management research to sponsor them within their organization.
Right, but in addition to encouraging, putting their money where their mouth is, because one of the themes that came out in our findings is that managers feel like they don't have the incentives sufficient enough anyway to warrant taking the time to do these kinds of things. I think that there are a lot of really good management faculty, and for that matter, industrial organizational psychology faculty, in many cities throughout not only the U.S., but of course elsewhere in the world, doing great and important management research. And I think organizations might really want to think differently about the utility that they can get if they were to even just call casually for opportunities to have lunch or to attend seminars. There's often speaker series in these places that practitioners, I'm sure, that you were just to ask if they could be part of an email list serve that would make them aware of speaker opportunities so they can come and basically be part of the learning community that is happening, you know, inside all of these schools.
Okay, great. Well, Deborah, I'd like to thank you for being on this inaugural edition of the podcast. It was a great interview and a great paper.
Well, hey, I really appreciate your including me, and I think it's great that you're doing this podcast because it's exactly these kinds of things that are going to help us break out of the mold of assuming that the only way we can communicate is through the print media and to primarily only those who read it. So I'm hoping your podcast will reach a lot of people and encourage them to basically all of us, academics, non-academics, at all levels, to be more proactive at finding each other and having two-way dialogue.
Okay, Deborah, if people were interested in contacting you to find out more information about the translation problems in management research, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, first let me say I'd be very, very happy to talk with anyone who shares an interest in this problem because I think it really is a very important one. I'll give you two ways. One would be my email address, and I am dshapiro@rhsmith.umd.edu, or my website is www.rhsmith.umd.edu/management/faculty/shapiro.html.
And if people have difficulty writing that down, just go to the University of Maryland College Park website and search for Deborah Shapiro, D-E-B-R-A Shapiro, and they should be able to find you that way.
Absolutely. In fact, that's probably the easiest way.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot, Deborah.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you for downloading Under New Management, a podcast of the Organizational Behavior Division of the Academy of Management. The OB division has over 5,000 members dedicated to the science and practice of organizational behavior. For more information about the OB division, visit www.obweb.org. For more information about the Academy of Management and its over 17,000 members worldwide, visit www.aomonline.org. Computer support for this podcast is provided by Vu Tran.